Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
My name is John. What's cabbage, I guess. And this is...
This is Broadway Breakdown.
Ooh, we're like the Olsen twins. I'm one half of your hosts.
And I'm one fourth of your hosts at this current state.
You kind of are.
Yeah. Yeah, we should put this on record. I've been... in case you didn't hear the last episode, I've been sick and I'm still sick.
You've been sick.
I've been very sick. My stomach has been very compromised, and I've lost a lot of weight, and John said...
Don't say it. I just said that he looks very skinny, and I did not say any other joke that could be offensive.
No. Just to be perfectly and frank with you, it was very, very meaningful to me to hear John say it. That's all I'll say. But
you also regurgitated my joke, so, like, what?
John, honestly, I mean, now that you don't have a gag reflex, what else is anyone going to do with you? But I don't know. It sounded fun in my head. Like this podcast with you.
Fair. Very fair. I also love, hey, to any new listeners we may have out there, we don't normally start each episode with talking about our ailments. Just kidding, we do.
We do. This, the very first episode we said about Broadway Breakdown is that we would cover Broadway, death, and everything in between.
Did we say death?
We did say death.
I was in a very safe place there, emotionally.
Yeah.
Wow, 2 years of therapy really does wonders.
It really does. Wait, it's been two... You had 2 years before that, or you're saying 2 years since then?
2 years since then. Two and a half years.
We are approaching our second anniversary.
No, third, right?
No. Because we started, math, you stupid motherfucker. We started in 2017.
17.
July
of
2017.
I remember it well.
Mm-hmm.
Delicious yes. year.
I remember it well.
Yeah.
We're getting there. We're getting close to two. It's nice.
Wow. And our terrible twos.
Our terrible twos.
And we're living up to the name.
But our listeners love it. And to prove how much they love it, I have whipped out...
Da, 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 da. Welcome to Matthew's Masturbation Corner.
No. Yes, but no. So we actually recorded this last time, but John is a stupid bitch who didn't have his mic on, so I had to cut it. And I really want our listeners to know that we see you, we hear you, and I think you're really fucking funny. I have set out to our listeners to write amazingly gay reviews for the podcast on iTunes. Slowly but surely, we're getting more of them. Here are two new ones. New-ish to us. John's not going to find it as funny the second time around, but I still find them delightful. So, fuck you, John. Miss Vanjie ? Wrote, like Disneyland, but fruitier. Not since the 2016 Tony Awards have two bottoms Audra McDominated this Broadway bussy.
Who hosted the 2016 Tony Awards? Was it Josh Groban and... No. Was it Josh Groban and Anne Frank? What? She is on the mind today.
She is.
God bless.
It was James Corden.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Who's doing it again?
Yes. Yeah, because 2016 was the Hamilton Tonys.
Yes. Yeah.
So, and he's doing it again.
I was in a weird place that Tony night. I remember it. Yeah. I remember it well. Continue.
Catherine McPhee would be so proud of the smiles, capital smile there, that these two provide to the MT twinks in their 40s. Sit down, Landon from BoCo. Stop turning and get your zhuzh from this podcast, honey.
Great reference. Great. We did talk. I remember being very impressed by this.
Yes.
When you did read it to me the first time and think, wow, this person, I mean, truly just... step aside, Annie Baker. Like, they took me on a journey.
The flick, more like, fuck you. I don't know. I
the
can't.
Flick, more like the dick.
No, it's a great one. And I love all the references. Landon from BoCo is episode 2 ref. Two different smile references. Thank
two
you.
Different.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, after that, we have Phil Krug. Krug wrote, breast.
He just wrote breasts.
He wrote breasts.
That's what he wrote about us. And
it's the one thing we need.
And to be honest, it makes sense.
It makes absolute sense. I was like, who are you, my father? Wrote, best Broadway pod! ! Excellent insight into both modern musical theater and the classics. Includes discussion of the entertainment and business side with hysterical banter between the two crazy. And here we
Excuse
have...
Excuse me?
We have a SAT word here, y'all. Pulchritudinous.
Pulchritudinous?
Is that the word?
Pulchritudinous, right?
No, it's pulchritudinous.
I can't...
Pulchritudinous.
I have this weird thing where... words that are spelled out loud, my brain doesn't comprehend it.
It's a word.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode.
I did look up the word because I still...
Oh, I was just going to look it up. Okay, too tired.
Well, if you want to look it up too to make sure I'm correct and not just remembering things in my own way. I believe it means, like, pleasing to look at, which is very kind of you, but we're also not seen on this podcast, so it's like...
But this is the most beautiful we'll ever look each episode of this.
I mean, it's a shame we're not...
Yeah, it just it's an adjective that also means beautiful. Dan gazed and... Who the fuck is Dan? Dan gazed admiringly at the pulchritudinous brunette.
Thanks, Dan.
And thank you...
Philip Krugman, Kruger, I don't know. Two crazy pulchritudinous hosts. Mm. So that was very sweet. So all I'm saying to y'all is you better step your bussies up, because I loved both of those reviews.
I'm also going to say that if you ever do want to read the reviews, you can also just read the reviews. But Matt still likes to take this time.
To
whip it out. Just makes me feel uncomfortable.
And Annie Baker's
air.
The flick the bean. And just, you know, have a lovely old time. So thank you, reviewers. Thank you, listeners. I don't thank John, because that last review was not about him. It talked about insight.
I know. Definitely. Yeah. Anything that mentions insight, I'm the opposite of insight. I'm outblind.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar. You're the top. You're a Coolidge dollar.
So I saw 3 shows since the last time we spoke. It would have been 4, but I had a ticket for Be More Chill on Wednesday, and I thought it was 8, but it was for 2. So when I went to check my phone around 6 to make sure that, like, I needed to get there at the right time, it was like the matinee, and I went, fuck.
Oh, the 2. Oh God!
Yeah.
So what? Did you just lose it?
It was TDF. It was TDF, so I ate it. So it was $50, which is sad, but it's been popping up a little bit on TDF, so I know I'll be able to see it again.
Oh, has it?
Yeah, I mean, not like every day, but like if you go on the website, like every 2 days, you'll probably see it at least once or twice that week.
I think that's TDF is probably how I'm going to see Hadestown. Hopefully in the next couple of days. Like we've been planning to go see it. It's on the Terp.
Yeah, Hadestown is how I saw TDF is how I saw Hadestown as well. And that's sort of been like you have to check every day, and then like if it's up, there's usually like a whole bunch of tickets for like that one day. Mm. But it goes really fast, so you just got to be like, grab it.
Yeah.
So I saw Hadestown, I saw Hillary and Clinton.
Oh.
And I saw Oklahoma.
Oh.
Yes.
But you put a question mark instead of the exclamation point.
Because this production puts a question mark instead of an exclamation point. Let me tell you.
I cannot tell if you're a fan or not, so I can't wait to unpack that.
It's a mystery. Let's get into it. I won't talk about Hillary and Clinton very much, mostly because I thought it was like just sort of fine.
Yeah, it kind of seems like it would be two really amazing consummate actors playing kind of these two powerhouse roles, but I don't feel as if we were going to have any groundbreaking catharsis surrounding those kind of characters, at least not right now.
Yeah, it's also like the roles aren't even really written as powerhouses, which was really disappointing to me. Like, I was ready for it to be like the Laurie Metcalf, John Lithgow show, and like they're in it. Like, and she's on stage the entire time, but it's like, I don't know, it's kind of a why play, because they don't really ask any significant questions, in my opinion. They don't do anything interesting, and they don't even make Hillary a meaty enough role for Laurie Metcalf to just, like, tear into. And that's, you know, she could. It's unfortunate. I mean, it's not like, you don't walk out and go, I wasted my day.
Sure.
It's also only 85 minutes, so, like...
Party,
so
love that.
I mean, if Angels in America were 85 minutes, it'd be running to this day.
Would it?
I don't know. That's neither here nor there. I'll go into Hadestown first, because I can be pretty concise about that.
Great.
Overall, really, really, really liked it.
Yes.
I saw it in its second week of preview, so there might have been some changes since I saw it.
Sure.
So take my opinions on it with a grain of salt, listeners. Mm-hmm. The music is... gorgeous.
Yeah, from what I've heard of the music,
it is really phenomenal music. It's beautifully orchestrated. The design is really effective. Staging is really solid. There are times when it's like super incredible. I love me a three-part turntable.
I love me Rachel Chavkin.
Like... Yeah. Well, so I'll get to that in a second, because her work in Hadestown is phenomenal for the most part, but I have one gripe with it, and it's kind of her. But it also becomes, it's a larger thing, and I can get into that also when I talk about Oklahoma as well.
Sure.
The cast is really strong. I mean, Ava Noblezada is...
Oh. She's... I walked by her on the street a couple weeks ago, and it took everything in my power not to punch her in the face, because I love her so much. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It would be a lifetime movie with the two of you.
Yeah.
I want to punch you so much, I love you. The John Miscavige, Ava Noblezada story on Lifetime.
Yeah. Brought to you by heavy knit sweaters.
Yeah. And Dove chocolate.
Oh.
But, no, I absolutely know what you mean. Her voice is just insane, and she's a really great actress.
She's a really great actress.
The role doesn't quite allow her to tap into as much as
she's like
can.
A Persephone role, right?
Eurydice.
Eurydice. Okay.
The one who goes down to Hades. Yeah. She and Reeve Carney are the lovers. The way that they sort of portray Orpheus is that he's kind of like on the spectrum in a way.
Okay.
Which is fine. It makes the romance a little harder to believe, because they have to fall in love so quickly, and because he's so awkward so awkward and like unable to really communicate, it's harder to buy into it. But I mean, I think Reeve Carney did a good job playing that. I think that any issues I would have with his performance is more their choice to portray Orpheus that way.
Sure.
But, like, whatever. I thought he sounded really lovely. It's a hard role to sing. He is up there.
Oh, really?
Vocally speaking, yeah. He has to use his falsetto, like, every 10 seconds. Yes. And not even, like, a pretty little intimate falsetto. Like, he has to... He's not allowed to shriek, nor is he allowed to be quiet intimate. He has to, like, make it sound fluid. Like, it's still in his chest voice, but still falsetto. It's a weird kind of mix. Weird kind of mix he has to do.
Yeah.
And I don't envy him. It's a really fascinating, really lovely piece. One thing kept me from being totally moved by it, and it's a technical thing, and I'll come back to that in a minute as I go into Oklahoma ?
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Oklahoma, also really liked. I went in knowing it was going to be very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
I brought my two grandmothers, my 95-year-old grandmother and my 88-year-old grandmother. The 95-year-old fucking loved it.
Love that.
She was like, oh my God, it's so different. And the 88-year-old's like, I don't like the curly. this production's going to divide everybody.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And I'm into that.
Yeah. But it's like weirdly not that.
Excuse me.
You're welcome. you're blessed. It's not that avant-garde, to be perfectly honest. There are moments where you're like, oh.
Someone just said that this Oklahoma fucks, you know, that like this.
Yeah.
That's what.
This Oklahoma is Oklahoma that fucks, to be sure. The lights are on almost all the time.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
On the eye?
Yeah, on the audience, on everybody. So there are two moments when the lights go out completely, just like complete darkness. And then there are a couple of times where they do a light cue to like green or like a orangey haze. And it's very rare. And they do it at very specific moments. But I would say 85% of the time, it's just like bright lights throughout the entire theater. So you see the cast, you see the audience, you see everything. Yeah. It's very interesting. And everybody's in modern day dress.
Right.
And the energy is very grounded and lived in.
Yeah.
So there's still energy to it. There's still a lot of excitement. Like Ali Stroker as Ado Annie is very high energy. She's phenomenal. I Can't Say No is a big showstopper.
I've heard.
Yeah. They don't go like, what if we did it? Like Laurie and Curly were in an S&M relationship and Ado Annie was schizophrenic. It's not that. Like, it's pretty straightforward. They don't cut any text. They don't do anything radically different with the text. They're just like, what if we didn't perform it like we're in a nostalgia fused production? Just like, these are normal people, normal day.
And it's set during our current time period? Or question mark? That's sort of where the question mark is.
They are dressed in modern day clothes.
Correct.
The set doesn't really give you any indication of where we're at because it's very bare bones. It's picnic tables and bleached wood everywhere and there are gun racks everywhere. They don't show any like cell phones or anything like that, and they keep the text as is. So all things in terms of like money or technology is all still whatever's written in 1943. So it does sort of exist in this vacuum of time where it's sort of, it's then, but it's also now.
Yeah.
I had two issues with it, which are both not like deal breakers, I think, in seeing it. Rebecca Naomi Jones plays Laurie, and she's so talented. I've seen her
I'm a huge fan of hers.
I saw her in American Idiot, Passing Strange. She's so
Did you see her in Murder Ballad?
No. She left by the time I saw it.
Oh, she was so good in Murder Ballad.
Literally everyone I know who saw her in it was like, you don't understand.
Oh, she's so good. Oh,
and
God, sorry.
She's not bad in Oklahoma. It's more that I feel like I could understand what she was trying to go for, and I didn't think it totally clicked.
Sure.
She was going for what I thought she was going for with Laurie was a woman who's constantly repressing her urges, most of them sexual. So you see her sort of going the opposite direction of like shutting down a lot and like being as cold as possible, and then all that's supposedly flooding over in the second half when she has her altercation with Judd, when she and Curly finally get together, when all this stuff happens. So she's a much colder Laurie than people are going to be used to, and I didn't mind it, but there were times when I was feeling like it was almost a robotic speaking voice in some of her dialogue, which I felt was more sort of good in theory rather than in practice.
Sure.
But that is something that was a me thing. Other people could be into it. I also wish that they had lowered the keys for some of her songs by about half a step, because they kept them in the original keys, but she still belted it.
Oh.
And she sounds good, but there are a couple of notes where I was a little worried for a second, and I would rather not be worried for her. I'd rather just enjoy her voice.
I guess I kind of expected her to live in more of a, like a mixy soprano place rather than
not
belty.
She does like a little wispy soprano stuff like intimate moments,
stylized
way. when they do the reprise of People Will Say We're in Love in act two, it is like they're in a mic together, their mouths are basically over each other, and it's like they're singing at a one volume level, that kind of soprano-y stuff. And then the other thing I didn't care for was the ballet, which I won't spoil for people.
I know very little about it, but I've heard that is, if there's one thing that is the most polarizing about this production, I would say it's that.
So this was done with just one dancer.
Okay.
And they really were sort of hitting home that Laurie is hallucinating and making it very like kind of odd. And why I didn't care for it was that I wasn't sure what story they were trying to tell in the dream through the dancing. The choreography was not telling me any kind of story. It just felt very uncomfortable. And I'm sure there are some people who are much more knowledgeable about modern dance who can tell me more about it or caught stuff that I didn't. But that was where I was at when I saw it.
Sure.
Otherwise, I really liked it. And it was really refreshing to see such a different take on it, especially after coming off of Kiss Me, Kate, which I found to be rather colorless, as we remember. To see this production, which was really kind of just taking some bold choices and sticking to it, I was really grateful for that. My point with Oklahoma that I want to
Yeah, I was going to say, how are you going to... I'm intrigued on how this all gets
seeing
tied back together.
Seeing Daniel Fish, the director of Oklahoma's work on it, and Rachel Chapkin with Hadestown, I'm starting to feel a little bit, with directors anyway on Broadway, that our most inventive and original directors in musical theater right now don't truly have the musical in their bones. And the directors that do have the musical in their bones are not nearly as inventive or original as those other directors. Which is not my way to throw shade at anybody. It's just something I've been observing for the last couple of years. Rachel Chapkin, I think, is such a brilliant visionary. And there's one thing keeping Hadestown for me from just, like, knocking me over sideways. And it's such a stupid technical thing. But it makes sense when you think about it. And it's that there are too many buttons and applause breaks in Hadestown. There are about 24 of them throughout the entire show. And the plot is so thin. It is essentially, it's the myth. Eurydice gets bitten. She goes down to Hades. Mm-hmm. Orpheus goes to try to get her. He almost retrieves her at the end. And it's spread out over a lot of time. And there are so many buttons in Hadestown, which most of them didn't need to be there. Mm. And the whole thing would have swept me up more if I wasn't constantly...
If you were caught up in the whirlwind of...
Yeah. And the reason I bring this up is because if you go... I'll never thought I'd say this to anybody, but if you go watch Phantom of the Neverland?
Oh.
Fuck you! I hate you so much. Finding Neverland. No. Phantom of the Opera. If you go see Phantom of the Opera...
Yes. I know what you're saying, though, because I was quite shocked when I saw Phantom of the Opera, and yeah.
Yeah, there may be, like, two applause breaks in Act 1, maybe, yeah. And, like, one or two in Act 2. And there's a reason for that. Hal Prince was a smart enough director to know that this is a romantic piece, and if you stop too often to think about it, you're gonna get out of it. You'll get thrown out of it, and you won't be caught up in the... romance of it all.
Hmm.
And if you just sort of ride the train and keep it going, you can enjoy it more.
Maybe that's one of the reasons why I didn't care for Come From Away so much, because I felt that so many of the songs buttoned in such a similar way in the beginning that I just thought for the first 40 minutes, I felt like I kept watching the same number over and over and over again. And so I just thought, okay, come on, Canadians. Like,
yeah, and that's totally fair, but that's what I mean is...
I get that.
Yeah, there are so many times, and actually this Oklahoma, they take away a lot of the buttons. There are very few times where you're allowed to applaud, and it really kind of keeps you in the moment. But even with this Oklahoma, there are a couple of times where it was like, if you really had like the musical theater in your bones, Daniel Fish, like this moment could have landed a bit better. Like there are some times where laughs don't land quite as well as they are meant to,
sure.
Because of a weird staging moment or transitional moment, and it's not. And I'm not trying to say that he or Rachel Chapkin don't understand musicals. I think they do from like a technical standpoint. But someone like a Hal Prince or Michael Bennett or Bob Fosse, who just like knew exactly how to make an audience applaud or not applaud, or when a song really needed to have a button or not have a button. There's a famous story with Gypsy when it was Out of Town. They didn't have a button at the end of Rose's turn because they were like, we don't want the audience to applaud. She's having a breakdown.
Yeah.
Artistically, it makes no sense. And Oscar Hammerstein came to see the show Out of Town. And they're like, why is the show not ending the way we want it to? Like, audiences are not leaping to their feet at the end of the show. But when we talk to them afterwards, they say it's good. Oscar Hammerstein's like, you need that button. Mm-hmm. And they go, why? And he goes, because they're not listening to the rest of the scene afterwards because they're just waiting to applaud for Merman. Mm-hmm. So you need to give them that button. They'll applaud the hell out of her. Then they'll listen to the scene afterwards, and that's an important scene. And then there'll be closure, and then they'll love the show. Mm-hmm. And they did. And the show is the show we know today.
Yeah. It's time, boys, I'm taking the balls and everything.
I saw some theater.
Yes, you did. Let's talk about it.
Let's talk about my life.
I finally saw The Prom.
Yay!
Which was just such a little gift. I mean, one of my favorite people in the whole world, Caitlin Kinnunen, just being a little gay little star up there, a little lesbian.
little lesbian
guitar player. I loved it. It's such a fun piece of theater that I kept kind of like sitting back and just going, I wish there were more original pieces that were like this, that just kind of took really, I think they took a lot of weird swings in that show.
Oh yeah.
A lot of weird swings. And do I think that all of them are successful? No, but in what show where you take a lot of comedic swings like that is everything perfect?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just the nature of the beast. But I loved it so much. Beth Lovell is just an alien. She's an alien, is what I've decided. And so I love watching her. I truly cannot wait to play Barry in the revival. Brooks is just amazing. I did not see Christopher Sieber. His understudy was on, and his understudy was really good. I love the give it some jazz.
What a
great role for that actress.
Mm-hmm.
And then the weird like cherry on the piece of the cake. So I haven't seen Caitlin a ton recently. But then the other day I was walking by, and like I was totally in my head, and I'm sure I was walking like a crazy person super quickly, and someone goes, "John." And I turn, it was Caitlin, and I had just seen the show last week? And then, so seeing her this week, we got to talk a little bit more, but I also happened to see her the day right after Ryan Murphy announced.
Yeah. That Ryan Murphy announced what, John?
He is turning the prom into a Netflix movie musical. Ryan Murphy is just such a funny little gnome to me. He's a queer little duck.
He reminds me of Mr. Pennywise in It. Just like he pops up when you least expect it.
He pops up in the weirdest places.
And he feeds off of your like most weak gaynesses.
Yeah.
So do we know if it's a full-on movie, like it's going to be shot on location, or is he going to do like
I think it's a full-on movie.
Okay.
So no one really knows the details yet, but I mean, it was just really funny because I had read about it the night before, and I meant to text her. This is not me saying Caitlin's doing the movie. This is not me saying anything. I mean, the truth of the matter is that when these kind of opportunities pop up, no one knows what's going to happen.
Yeah.
The cast could literally be James Corden as Emma and Lea Michele as Izzy. Is that her name? Yeah, Izzy, right?
The girlfriend?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so no one knows who's going to play who. No one knows what this actually entails, how connected it's going to be to the Broadway show, if any of them are going to transfer. Mm-hmm. It's not me saying any of that. It's just... It's just a funny... I remember seeing that headline pop up, and... What's a good comparison? Kind of like when you stub your toe, you're surprised. You know what I mean?
That you have a toe?
What? No, like what? You're just surprised. You're caught off guard for a moment, and then you kind of have to gather your bearings, and you go, oh, that's not a terrible thing. You know what I mean?
Sure. It's a little double-edged sword for me, because we all know how I feel about Ryan Murphy. I don't care for him, but I am all for the prom having more life outside of the theater.
I am as well.
And like, it's Netflix, so it's a bit more of a safety net. Yeah, Safety Netflix.
That's what we call it. Let's
coin it. Safety Netflix, trademark.
Trademark BB. Broadway Breakdown. Not that your BB.
No. I loved the prom so much as well.
Yeah.
Were there things that I was like, that doesn't totally work, or like I would change that? Sure. I mean, I think if you were to like go through the whole lexicon of Broadway musicals, you can maybe find three that are technically perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, like, perfection is overrated.
Yeah. Oh my God, I hate
it. There's a difference between greatness and perfection. Like, there are great musicals that have some flaws to them, but that's also what makes them great.
Yeah.
Hear
that? Flaws make you great.
Yeah, exactly. Take that, Ryan Murphy.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar. You're the top. You're a Coolidge dollar.
Let's get into some TV.
Yeah, let's talk about TVR, because we haven't done that in a while, I feel.
No, but before we get into territory that we both can dig in on, let's keep it theater related for a hot second and just talk about the new series that came out.
Yes.
Dossie Verdon.
Very excited. I have not watched it yet. I was going to actually maybe watch it this morning, but instead I just kind of laid on my couch.
That sounds about right. John's like, I was going to do something, then I decided to do nothing.
Yeah, because I have been doing too many somethings, and my brain, brain's dying.
Yes, you have been very busy, to be
fair. My brain is dying. But so talk about it. I'm very excited to watch it and to see what the DL is.
How familiar are you with like what going on with it in terms of like the structure and all that?
Not very familiar, because the other day I read a tweet that said, I cannot believe that, I believe it was actually a former Broadway Breakdown guest, Robbie Rizal, said, I just found out that Fosse Verdon is not written and produced and created by Ryan Murphy. And I was shocked and said, oh, I do know nothing about this.
Ah, yeah, no, it definitely seems like a Murphy show, especially, it's also on FX, and he's like...
Right, and he's their baby.
Yeah, exactly.
He's their gay baby.
Yeah, and the way that they kind of marketed it, they were trying to make it something similar to Feud.
Yes, it read very Feud to
yeah.
me. Yeah,
so it is, so their main source of material to base it off of it is the recent Fosse biography.
Mm.
Recent, I think it came out like 5 years ago. It's a phenomenal biography. I highly recommend it. It's long. It's a long book, but it's a very fast read.
Mm.
And the show chronicles it similar to the book, in the sense that the book does it in chapters of going from his birth to his demise, and every chapter is like, you know, it's like 26 years left, 15 years left, 10 months left, like things like
oh,
that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because Fosse died in 87 in D.C., he was going to the opening night of the National Tour of Sweet Charity that was starring Donna McKechnie, and Verdon was actually his date, and she was like accompanying him out of the hotel to the opening night. He had a heart attack and like died in her arms. Very poetic when you think
that
about
very poetic.
When you think about the relationship. So the show takes that as well, but then they also mess around with timelines. It goes all over the place. So
yeah, it kind of seemed like it would, because of how many different people have been announced as characters
yeah.
in the different shows of his life.
Yeah, which is fun. I mean, they announced like Laura Osnes with Shirley MacLaine, because Shirley MacLaine did the movie version of Sweet Charity. So far, I mean, maybe she shows up again in the first episode. She pops up for a second to say like three lines, and I was like, oh, great, glad we had a moment with Shirley then. They like start with him in DC, and then it goes to him filming the Sweet Charity movie, and then Sweet Charity opening, and then it's him starting to film Cabaret, and then it goes like back for a second.
Mm.
And then I think episode 2 goes back to how they met, and then episode 3 is like
her but only story. One episode's aired yet.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. But like you see, they did a promo for the second episode. It's them working together on Damn Yankees, and I was like, oh, so we're like going backwards and forward. And then they also like showed some scenes of them rehearsing Chicago. I'm like, so how, like, are we just like going backwards and forwards? I'm not quite sure. It'll be interesting to see how it continues.
Yeah.
Right now, I like it.
Cool. You seem convinced.
Yeah. I don't know if my liking it is just because I enjoy watching them like do Broadway stuff.
Right.
Yeah. I can't rightfully tell you that it's well written. It suffers from that thing that shows like this do, and Feud was so guilty of this, I can't even tell you, of saying things like, this coming from Patty Chayefsky, America's best literary writer, or something like that, or like, hey, Bobby, how you doing with that 6th Broadway show right now? What's it called again? Little Me? Oh, right.
Yeah.
And then, like, Hal Prince is there for a second. I'm like, oh, what's your next show, Hal? Oh, I'm doing something with Steve about a single guy. He can't commit. And I'm like, oh, sounds fun. Shit like that. That part of me sits there going, ha, 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 I know what that is. And also, God, I know what that is.
Yeah.
Like, stop force-feeding us. We know.
Yeah.
But there are some other fun things about it. They also... Have you seen All That Jazz?
No, I never have. Oh. I've never delved into... of course I know who Fosse is. Of course I'm familiar with his body of work.
Mm-hmm.
I have not ever delved into his... his autobiographical...
Stuff.
Biographical. Yeah, or his biographical... those kind of things.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... I feel like I would learn.
Yeah. I mean, All That Jazz is good to watch. Just, A, it's a good movie.
Yeah, I've heard.
Yeah, it's his, you know, memoir film in a way. It's also, like, his version of 8.5, which is the Fellini film that Nine is based off of. Yeah. But they do some things in Fosse Verdon when they, like, try to show glimpses of his past that's sort of trying to take a page from All That Jazz, cinematically speaking, like, how they film it, how they cut to it. And it's... I mean, it's well done, but you also sit there going, if you've seen All That Jazz, you sit there going, like, All That Jazz didn't matter.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to, like, put down the show. It's just these are things that, like, I both like and keep me from loving it at the same time.
Sure.
The best thing about it is Michelle Williams.
She
is wonderful. I never knew Gwen Verdon, personally. It's one of my greatest failures in life is that
I've always said that.
Yeah, before I would turn 10, which is when she died, I never sought her out to become her gay best friend.
Yeah.
But
you really dropped the ball there.
I really did. But from all the interviews I've seen with her and the clips of her performing, Michelle Williams doesn't imitate so much as emulate. Is that the right word?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like she, I don't want to say like she becomes Gwen Verdon. It's not like the kind of transformation where she gets down every tick and every voice inflection. That's not what she's about. She kind of does a hint of the voice that we know of Gwen Verdon, like a hint of the mannerisms. So we get the general idea and then focuses more on
like the psyche of what her essence of life was.
Yeah. And you get it. I feel like you really do get it. And she does a great job. Yeah. Sam Rockwell is a little more difficult task because at the moment they haven't really written Fosse well.
Mm.
And it's hard to write him well because the biography that they based it on portrays him as someone who kind of lucked his way into success.
Oh.
Not to say that he wasn't talented. The biography is more that he didn't know what to do with his talent. That the reason why he would often go over budget and over schedule is because he didn't know really what he wanted and would just shoot as many options as he could, or he would rehearse for as long as he could because he was an editor. He knew he knew when something wasn't working and to change it, but he didn't like have a vision in his head and like throw it out there.
Yeah. And that's a very frustrating kind of person to work with. And
And that's something that the show tries to deal with as well. And they say that Verdon was more like his translator and she was the person who could interpret what he wanted and make it even better.
Mm.
So they show this bit. There's like a little moment with the two of them at the beginning of the series where they're working on a dance together in their youth. And he's giving her like an arm movement. And then she adjusts it with the hand. And then he says, okay, now do it on the other side. She does. And he goes, no, your way's better. And they go back. So you see him being an editor while she's kind of like maneuvering it. So it's interesting. I'm interested to see where it goes. The first episode is fun. I can't rightfully say it's like the be all end all. And I kind of wanted it to be. So we'll see.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch it.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
In other television news that John can actually give insight to.
Well, once again, let's refrain from using that word.
I'm just trying to like correlate with our reviews. You know, I want people to get what they think they're getting from our iTunes reviews.
Like I said.
Guys, it's been months since we've done this, so let's talk about it. RuPaul's Drag Race. Gentlemen, start your engines.
RuPaul's Drag Race. You're the best woman. Best woman wins. RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yes.
I think we also haven't done it in months because there's, and I think it's the general consensus on the internet, that in the last year and a half, 2 years, we've been oversaturated.
Yes.
There's been a lot of RPDR and
very much so
and so and they all kind of melted together. Yeah, there were moments, the Ben de la Creme self-elimination, I'm sure we talked about, you know those kind of things, but especially in the last 9 months as I've been carrying this baby, it just didn't seem important to talk about, but I'm here to say today that I think we need to talk about it again because this season is just the drama.
It's
the drama.
Bonkers. Yeah. So
romance, the fighting,
so much fighting,
injuries. Alyssa Edwards.
Oh my God, Seth. What's his face? Not Seth MacFarlane. Guy from Community and the Soup.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
What's his
Joel
name?
McHale.
Joel McHale.
Joel McHale and Michelle Visage's, I'm going to go out and just say it, sexual tension.
Oh yeah.
They were ready to fuck.
She wanted to hate fuck him so bad.
She did.
Great. I loved it.
You could see it.
Tiffany Pollard.
Have you ever met Joel McHale or are you a fan of his?
I was. I haven't really enjoyed him since Community. I found him to be more like actual douchey.
I get that. And I think he is. Well, okay. I think that's the character that he's decided to continue on in Hollywood. I met him when I was on tour. Mm-hmm. We were at the same theater and I tried to, when that happened, I would normally try to refrain, but there were two people that I had to stalk and it was him and David Sedaris, my two different loves.
Yes.
And Joel McHale was more of an accident where we happened to be walking into the stage door around the same time. And I couldn't not in the opportunity. And let me take this moment to tell you that he is tall.
Yeah.
He is very tall, and he is built like a motherfucking brick house. I don't know if I said anything to him other than I just probably kept repeating, like, sorry. I wanted to just, like, pound on his chest with my wrists in a very female 1950s fashion and sob and, like, kind of, like, slide down. You know how that was a thing that they would do in the 50s?
Just
run into a man's chest and go, No. It was kind of, you know, Me Too-ish, but that wasn't a thing.
Sure, no, it's the I hate you, fuck me.
But so RuPaul's Drag Race, he was a judge on that. Sorry, that went to a weird sexual place for me.
I mean, that's another place this podcast usually goes.
Truly. But yeah, I was talking to a friend last night, and gosh, these girls just are here for the drama.
They really are. It's... So, for... Those of you who aren't watching, this season of contestants, we have a bunch of nicely polished queens who, like, know how to compete, and then queens who think very highly of themselves.
That are messes.
Who are messes and won't own up to it.
Yeah.
We finally had Vanjie finally admit that her runways have been underwhelming.
Yeah.
But it took her to go through The Exorcist parts 1, 2, and 3 to finally get there. And then even after she admitted it, went full on Exorcist again at Evie.
But here's the thing. I love Evie. She's probably my front runner in this competition.
Sure.
I need her to stop.
I
need her to stop giving all those other bitches that much of her attention and her energy.
Sure.
You're not there to... It's not Evie's drag race. You're not there to teach the children things, Evie. Or to put yourself in bodily harm, which she did yesterday.
Yeah.
I love that she has, you know, that she has this illness. I love that she is going and showing her strength and being a fucking fierce competitor on this show, despite everything. But she basically admitted yesterday after she did stuff with her ankle that compromised it and then continued to do stuff just to make a point, to literally walk off and go, send me home now, bitch, to Silky Nutmeg. I I'm not here for.
Oh, see, that I wasn't here for her on Untucked. Because I've been enjoying Evie mostly for being honest with the girls. Because we all know those people who are like, I'm just not booking, and I keep singing the same song over and over, and it's like, what's their problem? And it's like, well, maybe change the song.
Right.
And with Drag Race, it's even more obvious than that, because they will tell them what to change. And we
have physical proof of watching these queens week after week, watching them do the same thing, and being like, what's wrong? Why aren't I being in the top?
And so Evie, I understand, got very frustrated, and because she has a very blunt manner, very bluntly was like, they told you what to change it. And because a lot of these queens are very sensitive and won't admit it, they freak out. And Vanjie, to her credit, admitted after she freaked out, she's like, I freaked out because you were right and I didn't want to admit it. And also because we all know Vanjie came to that. Vanjie was red for only coming out in corsets and bodysuits.
Which she was doing repetitively, and it was like, girl.
And it's because, and she got mad about it because you just know that's all she brought.
Yeah, I know. It hurts my soul. Yeah,
because there was a moment in her brain when Michelle said, stop doing this. You could see in her eyes that she was like, fuck, that's all I have.
Yeah.
Like, no gowns, no nothing.
I think even like another queen kind of, more or less, I don't think she meant to let the audience know, but she said something to the effect of, how could they read someone when this is all that queen brought? You know, that's, you know, and it kind of let us know, oh, this is what Brandy brought.
Yeah. Well, that's when you have to start being creative and, you know, I know a lot of them hate the word, but crafty. Mm-hmm. And Eve even says, like, we have all this fabric on the wall that we're allowed to use, like, free of charge. Like, add on to your stuff. Like, make it more. And in that sense, I do understand where Evie's coming from. It's like, you have this opportunity, and yes, like, a lot of the challenges are ridiculous, and the time frame is ridiculous, but, like, if you really want this, you will take everything that you're being offered, and you'll find the time to make stuff work. Like, Alaska has gone on record to say, like, she had so many sleepless nights on All Stars because she would stay up to drill her words, to drill her choreography, to make extra stuff in her room to, like, sneak into the workroom the next day because winning meant so much to her. And I'm sure Evie sort of liked that as well. In fact, lack of sleep is probably what's making her so crazy right now.
I guess so. I don't know.
I would say her on Untucked, I thought, was a little too harsh because...
I did too, because I didn't think Vanjie when she said that you should go home, I don't think for a second Vanjie was like, I want to send Evie home. I literally think Vanjie was just like, Rue was making her say someone. Yeah. She was like, I'm going to say my sister because she was right. And I'm upset at her.
Yeah, Vanjie was saying it as a joke.
Yeah. And then Evie went like full on. I was like, girl.
Yeah.
Well, I think on the defensive.
I think she was getting some flashbacks there, especially with when Silky said it as well. And she can be a paranoid bitch. Silky, I understand. I think Untucked got a little too harsh. I thought
so too.
It was the one time I saw Silky actually try to be an adult and be like, you want to talk about it? And Evie's like, nah!
Yeah.
But before that in the actual episode, because Silky's saying, I think Evie should go home because she's injured. Yeah. And then Evie going on the runway later to do her stuff, I actually kind of enjoyed that because it was a little bitchy, but in a lovely dramatic way of being like, see how injured I am now, bitch? And like walk off stage. I just enjoyed that. I also like don't care for Silky. I think that Silky lives in her own world.
Part of me wonders, because this season does feel super overproduced.
Yeah.
If they are, they have to be leading these girls. I mean, it's very clear now that this is a VH1 production and that this is what VH1 does. So how do you watch the platform? Do you watch it?
I either watch it at a bar or I watch it through a friend's VH1 account.
Okay, so you get the VH1 commercials then that they do. All those commercials are for reality TV shows that I have no fucking clue who these people are.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's beginning to seem a little bit like VH1 has a hat full of Mad Libs and picks out words and they're like, okay, our next show is going to be Tiny and TJ's Friends and Family Off, which I think is almost basically a title of one of the reality shows they talked about last night. And I just, who? What? Why? And so I'm wondering how much of the craziness of this season is produced. I'm wondering if that's backlash from how much they are trying to overproduce it. I haven't decided if it's better or worse yet, but I'm on the... I'm not going to stop watching.
I also, before we wrap this up, do you watch Veep by any chance?
I do. I love Veep. It's one of my favorite shows.
So the way that Tony Hale whispers into Julia Louis-Dreyfus's ear every time about like this is so-and-so, this is so-and-so. I feel like that is the producers in the earpiece to RuPaul every time he goes through the workroom.
Yes. So the last two or three seasons, his workroom go-arounds have been completely different.
Yeah.
You could tell when they upped his medication.
Because you know that it's like, he's tired, he doesn't want to be there, he doesn't really care really anymore. And they have to be like, so this is Plastique TR, she's only been in America for 3 years, her family doesn't approve of her drag, go from there. Or like or even All Stars 4, they're just like, that's Naomi Small, she was on season 8, you remember her, blah blah blah, she has the legs, make sure to find a way to talk about how nervous she is.
Yeah.
And it's just so funny.
Yeah.
Because it is so obvious. That's the one obvious thing that I actually find still very entertaining, because it's like, Rue does not connect at all.
He has no idea.
If we're lucky, he remembers like two queens from a season now.
Yeah.
Billy, I'd like to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar. You're the top. You're a Coolidge dollar.
And on that
note, everybody.
It's time to go. I finally finished my iced coffee.
John finally finished his iced coffee.
How we know when an episode's done.
Gatorade. So, ending topics. Go see Hadestown, Oklahoma, prom. Let us know what you think.
Watch
Gwen Verdon. Watch Fosse Verdon. Catch up on Drag Race so you know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And write us some more gay reviews so I can just flick the bean in front of John.
Oh my God.
Love it.
Yep. Do that.
Who should we get for today's closing episode? Closing of this episode.
Either Caitlin or Miss Lavelle close us out?
We've had neither. Caitlin would be the first time we've had a guest close us out.
That could be fun.
I like the idea of that, but now I kind of want Beth Lavelle. I just want that. I want Beth Lavelle.
Let's do Beth first, then Caitlin. Caitlin, we got you next time, girl.
Yeah, we got you, girl. Just Beth has earned it. God damn it. She's been around for a while. She's earned this. All right. So angry. Just give it to her already. Give her the goddamn award. This has been Broadway Breakdown. I'm 1/4 of a host, Matt Koplik.
And I'm an eighth of a host, John Miscavige.
And this is Beck
Level.
You just keep saying,
let's just keep ending with, this is Broadway Breakdown.
And this is Broadway Breakdown.
This is Broadway Breakdown. This is Broadway Breakdown. This is Broadway Breakdown.
So don't make a move.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.